and welcome to the Groovy Uncle Podcast with me, Glenn Prangnell. The Groovy Uncle Podcast takes a look at the creative output of a prolific bunch of musicians and artists based in the Medway towns. Each week, I'll be catching up with some friends, old and new, to talk about what projects they've been involved in over the years and what they're doing now.
You're listening to the Groovy Uncle Podcast.
So let's dive into the soup of groovy uncleness. Between 1985 and 1992, Kent band The Claim released two albums, Armstrong's Revenge and 11 other short stories, and Boomitella, as well as five singles and an EP. The band folded in 1993, but in 2009 they compiled a retrospective album, Black Path, and performed at a couple of reunion gigs. In 2017, the band were invited to work on an album and some live shows as Jim Riley's Blues Foundation. An album of JRBF material was released in 2018 titled A Very British Blues Explosion. The following year, The Claim released an album of brand new material called New Industrial Ballads. I recently caught up with Claim frontman Dave Reed.
It's what you do.
Dave, hello. How are you doing, mate?
Hi, Glenn. Yeah, I'm good, thanks. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. What have you been up to? How have you been coping in the last couple of years with all this nonsense going on?
I think, like most people, it's been tough at times. In my line of work, things just kind of just carry on, really. We've still got to do what we've got to do. Been fortunate. I've been able to work from home for a large part of it, so I'm grateful that I haven't been affected in that way like lots of other people. But we're all touched by other people that are affected some way or other.
Yeah.
So in the long term, I hope we're gradually creeping out of it.
So what have you been doing with your time? Have you made any music?
Yeah, it was an opportunity to sit down and write some ideas. Problem with me, I always need a band to start fleshing those ideas out. So I've got a catalogue of dozens of ideas that haven't really seen the light of day. Yeah, so that's what I've been doing. Obviously, you asked me to sort of collaborate, so it's been great to have, even though it's by correspondence, to get involved in the other bits and pieces. The thing is, it's like, if I'm not in a band, things tend to dry up for me, really.
So have you not done any other collaborations in the way that we did it with anyone else, or have you? I mean, you've done a couple of things with Graham, haven't you, for the Mr. Unswitchable?
Yeah, but not any other that I can think of at the moment, any other collaborations. No. I mean, I've still got a wild idea of a solo project at some point, but I think I just need to be a bit more disciplined and structured about treating it as a job and sitting down and spending some quality time doing it. But when you're at home, you often get sidetracked into doing other things that are either more pressing or just you're a victim of your own procrastination.
So, I mean, do you think you'll do that when you get around to do it? Will you do that, back in the studio proper?
Yeah. I know Kev Younger has been doing his album with the Heist Band, and he'd asked me to play guitar on one track. And a couple of weeks ago, he had a bit of a lo-fi gig in Chatham, and I went along to watch and end up getting dragged up on stage, a bit like Bruce Forsyth and Sammy Davis, you know. Hey, well, we haven't rehearsed anything, you know. But we ended up doing that. And only last Friday, Kev invited me to participate in the Scale Down events that he and his other co-hosts do. So I went up to Fitzrovia in London for 15 minutes of solo stuff. And what I'm getting round to is that Kev's been a great encouragement and supporter in me pushing a solo project for myself, even if it's just getting in the studio and just rambling on for a day. And that might be the start of something else. But I've got lots of ideas that won't necessarily fit the mould of Claim stuff, which is quite liberating because you know, historically you write for a band, and because you know that that's, but you're confined by instruments and style, I guess.
So when and where did your musical career begin?
My dad had a motor accessories shop in Dagenham, and all kinds of people used to come in and out, and I'm not sure what kind of business they were doing. But there was this one bus conductor called Jim who brought in this bashed up old Spanish guitar which had spray paint over it, had a big crack in it, no bridge, a couple of machine heads missing, and about two strings. I think my dad gave a fiver for it, but back in, you know, 1977, that was probably a lot of money for that. You know, just to give to me, say, yeah, I, you know, have a mess around with that, son, because he, I was sort of interested in music at the time and larking about. And I showed a real interest in learning to play. And I remember both mum and dad saying, well, if you're very serious about it, we'll get it fixed for you. I said, yeah, yeah. So they did. I took it to a shop in Gravesend, and they put a bridge on it and strung it up and a few machine heads. And that was it. And that was throughout the summer. I was just trying to make a sound out of it, and, you know, without much success, really. And then my English teacher, who's secondary modern as it was then, also played guitar. He played sort of folk, ragtime, finger picking. And he offered to give up his Friday lunchtime to teach anyone who expressed an interest. Guitar. So there's quite a bit of interest. About a dozen people all turned up with their brand new classical guitars in their brand new guitar slip cases, and I turned up with mine, which was bashed all over the place with spray paint all over it, and that was it. So I felt a little self-conscious, I guess, but, you know, that was a time of punk, so I guess I was slightly encouraged by that attitude.
So when did you first get involved in the Medway music scene?
So, as you know, Arnie was the driving force really behind the band. He was the one that made all the contacts. I was just like the precious prima donna who would write songs and sing. But by the time we all come together and formed a band and decided that's what we wanted to do, we knew of the Prisoners and the Milkshakes, and we'd go to the Big Smoke from Cliff, where we were from, trying to tout for gigs. But we felt very much outsiders, because there wasn't, you know, we weren't part of any clique. We weren't part of anybody that had gone to school with each other. We had a lot of math school boys that knew each other. So we really had to try and chip our way at the bands that were there, either to try and get supports or to find places to play ourselves in Chatham and or Medway generally. I guess it was the Prisoners and the Milkshakes that was the first awareness of Medway music, really, and figured that that would be our natural route, although we did play a few gigs in Gravesend, but wouldn't recommend that. You know, we were very much on the outside of that, and we've kind of traded on that a little bit. You know, we would always announce, "Hi, we're the Claim, we're from Cliff."
We do things differently.
Yeah, well, I guess when you had, bands, or, you know, you look at the Milkshakes and the Prisoners, there were sort of tangible genres that they were attached to, really, whether it was 60s garage or psychedelia or beat or whatever. Whereas, you know, I think where we were coming from, although we were heavily influenced by that music growing up and listening to it, that didn't necessarily translate into the songs we were writing and what we wanted to be. We wanted to be ourselves, but we wanted to be modern and different, I guess, at the time. Study that, you know, analyze it too much. That's just how it kind of happened. It was quite difficult, really difficult stuff, because nobody danced to our music. But we played an awful lot with the Dentists. We supported them, you know, many times, and their style of music was very energetic, and they always managed to get people up on the dance floor, and we were always quite envious of that.
Let's go back to your childhood.
What's your earliest musical memory?
I would have to say, and this has stayed with me for quite a while, it was probably Herman's Hermits. I'm Into Something Good. Is that what?
Yeah.
Is that
oh title? Yeah. Yeah.
But I distinctly remember being interested in our wireless that was at home then before my mum and dad invested in a G Plan stereogram. We had just a wireless, a valve wireless, and I would sit there I must have been 3 years old, I guess.
Hmm.
I don't know when that came out, but it was on the radio on the on the light program or something. I remember thinking, how does that sound come out of there? And once I'd got past the notion of there aren't little people in the back of that radio performing, obviously knew that it was happening somewhere, but I don't remember us having a record player at that point, although we must have done, because Dan had his old jazz and Frank Sinatra collection. But thinking that people just must have turned up in the studio and, one after the other performed their song. He didn't figure. But, I was three. Come on, company's
fair enough. Enough.
I would have grown up from the cot listening to Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, Ella Fitzgerald. Yeah, so that was kind of ever present, just as the, they had a growing family and probably had less time to relax and play music. But in terms of when I started to become interested in music, where it really kind of pricked up my ears, it would have been the Beatles, I think, probably. You could listen to a lot of it. It was just all around. And it was very, you could pick the easier stuff and then work through the catalogue as you became a bit more, mature in your ears. A bit like Dad's Army, where everybody gets onto Corporal Jones to start with because it's slapstick. And it's only when you're a bit older that you appreciate the relationship between Mannering and Wilson.
I think probably the Beatles is probably one of the earliest examples in pop rock music when, you could see why everyone would like it. Yeah, I mean, not literally everyone would like it, but you can see why it was that had that broader appeal than anything else.
Yeah, and they were around, like, everything was around. You just look around you. I remember a local jumble sale coming away with plastic moulded, almost salmon coloured Beatles guitar, with the signatures on it. That was because ever present, and even my grandparents knew about the Beatles, and everybody knew about the Beatles. And by the time they just split up, I think, by the time I was showing any interest in music. And then getting like the early 70s, when the glamour and glitz of Top of the Pops, I was allowed to stay up late enough to watch that. You had Slade and Mark Bonan and David Bowie and things like that. You think, wow, which was current. I've got an older brother who you look up to in terms of what he was listening to musically. That was the thing, especially Bowie. He'd always want to play his records. And then when punk came along, he was sneaking in his room to play his records. When woe betide you if he found out you were playing them. There was no heavy rock. There was no prog rock. There was none of that. And I coincidentally wasn't interested in that. I loved the Who, but that was as far as it went. But it was always, guilty pleasures, I guess, from an early age. When you're that impressionable as a teenager, there's certain stuff you shouldn't be listening to and enjoying. But I remember, when me and Arnie were listening to Frank Sinatra and some jazz that we managed to get hold of, and then Arnie went off because he was a great consumer of stuff where, I had a pretty scant record collection, I have to say.
One day my life did change. I missed horizon and the blood red skies, and a soft voice did kiss my face, and I was gone. Under canvas we heard the morning come. side and thought of you, my horizon under blood red skies, and a soft voice did kiss my face, and I was gone. Under canvas I thought of what I'd done. Lay beside her, thought of you.
I did notice that, and I guess it's common for a lot of people, my mum and dad, you know, they were listening to that when they were growing up in their 20s, in their formative years. And as they got older and had a family, never kept pace and challenged their own ears as to what was good, what was current. But, you know, then they had in their record collection Andy Williams and Jack Jones. My mum was a big Barbra Streisand fan, so there's plenty of those. But Harry Nilsson, they're one of...
Oh, I love Harry Nilsson.
And I really love that as a kid, you know, it's all quite... You know, it's that one where... Is it Nilsson Schmilsson, where he's like...
That was always on at our house, mate. Great, great record, that is. And that was probably one of the first kind of people that did, you know, the American Songbook type album, wasn't it? You know?
Yeah, definitely. And I was... The other week, I was... had almost an entire day listening to all his back catalogue. And I thought, you know, the Lemon Twigs, they just ripped off everything he's ever done. You know, all these, just the way he can change beats and tempos and shapes in songs that they do, dancing around the place. You know, I thought they were a mashup of Freddie Mercury and Elton John and all this thing. But no, they're just a total lift from Harry Nilsson, who's, yeah, top bloke. I was in a band called... Jack Kay, just after the first sort of main life form of the Claim. And there seems to be no end of bands called Jack Cade at the moment. but this was in 95, I think, for a couple of years. And I was with a guy called Darren, who's a great songwriter, and really enjoyed some of the stuff we did with him. And you know, I still enjoy playing him just on my guitar. It was a very kind of short-lived project because I was asked if I wanted to play guitar with the decaying moments of the Dentist, who turned into an outfit called Cokes, who were hopefully going to pick up a deal in the States. But Bob and Rob Grigg had left, so Mark Matthews asked me if I knew any guitarists. No, he asked me if I wanted to play guitar with him and if I knew a drummer. So I did some stuff with Mark for 3 or 4 years. And there's some really, I think, standout songs from that. So that time working with Mark was really enjoyable because it was quite different, because I'd only ever really written with Arnie. So really, it's just looking back at the Claim's back catalogue, two albums, a 12-inch EP, and five singles. Arnie will probably tell me it's a different number of singles. I'm trying to remember how many it was. And then... It wasn't until we got back together to promote a CD back in 2009, but we've been every so often coming together to do a few gigs, and then we figured that we had an album in us of gathering loads of flotsam and jetsam and some new ideas, and we released an album in 2019. That's called New Industrial Ballads. That was the third difficult album, because there was 30 years between Boomy Teller, which was our second album, and this. Boomy Teller has always maintained some critical success amongst the small circle of people that love the band, because that represented, I think, a possible cusp of commercial success, if not artistic. And we were, you know, due to do another album, but it ended up carving it up into singles, because we figured that gave us the best chance for sort of commercial exposure. So to do New Industrial Ballads was fantastic, because it gathered some unreleased material. It gave us the opportunity to write some new stuff and to see whether we could still write songs and record them and play them well. So it's probably the standout for me, yeah, that album.
And I'm presuming that after that you were possibly thinking about doing more, maybe, but then COVID, I suppose.
That's right. We, fresh off the back of that, we figured, well, there's still some more ideas coming along. There's other bits and pieces that were floating around yet to be caught. And that was, yeah, that I think we would have probably recorded it by now if had it not been for COVID. So that's still very much our aim. And we were talking about not taking ourselves too seriously, because we are men in our 50s, and whether we figured that we were, you know, in a position to strike it out there. But really, it doesn't matter, does it? It's all about, do you enjoy what you're doing? Are you proud of what you're doing? And, you know, if people listen to it, great. If they don't, that's still our legacy. Yeah, and you'll know the recording experience was great for us, and it's gratifying to know that we could still make a half decent sound.
And then of course there's the Claims involvement with JRBF, Jim Riley's Blues Foundation.
Yeah, of course. So you're feeding me these lines here, Ben, aren't you? So that came about because with Jim Riley, he's been the sort of the golden thread through a lot of people's journeys in music, in Medway. And right from the first album, where he played harmonica on one of our tracks on Armstrong's Revenge, he's somewhat been involved on and off, produced the second album with Johnny Sequins. And then we wanted him to be involved in this, the latest project, our most recent album, and invited him to perform when we had a gig at the 100 Club. Just coincidentally, the promoter, Adrian Gibson, also did blues nights and invited us a lot, invited Jim to perform with that. But Jim, without a band, without a blues band, was at a loss until he turned around and looked at us and said, yeah, if these guys want to do it. And of course, you know, couldn't think of a worse blues band that you would put together to do it. But Jim's, he's quite canny. And the sound he was after was people who didn't really know what they were doing.
But I think that's really inspired. I mean, if you'd said, you know, oh, there's a, we're going to do, you know, an R&B, Jim Reilly fronted blues band and the backing band of The Claim, I think a lot of people might have gone, hey. But it worked brilliantly. It was, you know, it's...
Yeah, he knew we were all right as players. We were a tight band, with a bit of guidance as to, you know, what he was after. And it was very much like that. There wasn't a huge amount of, you know, freedom or scope. He said we were doing these songs and this is how we're going to do it. And he knew what he was after, and you know, which was, you know, like you say, it was inspired, because I think the album that turned out, Glenn, was terrific.
Brilliant.
When you first walked in my room, I couldn't believe your grace. Like a flash of light guiding me to another time and place. I knew that we had met a thousand times. I can't explain how I knew. So a love started there and then in the misty light of my room. But I treated you wrong and now I can't get back to you. I'm running out of time. The greedy soul wants more and more, cannot be denied. So you went away and left me crying, oh how I realized. It's a story told many times, you can't see what you got till it's gone. Now I'm just another broken man, mourning how my life went wrong. But I treated you wrong. I can't get back to you. I'm running out of time. I'm running out of time. I'm running out of time.
Time. I'm running out of time. I'm running out of time.
Is there going to be more of that?
I think Jim's, he's not written it off, but I think he's focusing on the studio at the moment, and it's always a bit of a, it's something you have to get match fit for. So whether he's protecting his old lug holes for studio work, but he, you know, never say never. But it's something, yeah, we'd be up for it because it was enormous fun touring with Dr. Feelgood. Yeah, let's do something again soon.
This or that. Ocean or space?
Space.
River or mountain?
Mountain.
Lost at sea or abandoned in the desert?
Lost at sea.
Starter and main or main and pudding?
Starter and main.
Past or future?
Future.
Christmas or birthday?
Crimble.
Jacques Cousteau or David Attenborough?
David Attenborough.
Red or white?
White.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Pen or pencil?
Pencil.
Correct answers. Well done. Don't you like these in-depth, serious interviews?
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, what's, you know, is this a kind of a Reader's Digest psychological quiz?
Yeah, it's a psychological profiling.
Yeah. So, well, I'm a potential serial killer. Is that what you're getting from that?
Funnily enough, yes. Right, so have you got anything upcoming that you want to tell anyone about, or anything you want to publicise or talk about? Speak now or forever hold your...
Yeah, well, it's for the claim to get back together again as soon as our bass player has fixed his shoulder, because his son knocked him off his bicycle and he snapped his collarbone. So he's been recovering from that, which put us back a bit. So as soon as Stuart's back in the proverbial saddle, then we can...
Get well soon, Stuart.
Yeah, I think he's almost there, but... I think the new year will see us get together and start to do some writing, and I certainly want to get out and play again. I just need to find a lighter amplifier or a roadie, because those AC30s don't get any lighter, do they? They really just don't. Not. Yeah, certainly don't want to go up any stairs with it. That's
bugs,
falling over at my age, it's I could put a hip out.
It's not funny anymore, is it?
No. But as I was saying, you know, like, Kev's been a great encouragement to sort of focus my attention on a solo project. And I think, you know, as you've done, Glenn, technology, it makes that far more accessible to produce something of real good quality. And like you say, to be able to collaborate with people, over the interweb has been an inspiring thing that you've done with your project, mate. I'm glad to have been involved in that. It's good.
Yeah, that's good.
I mean, pick up on your backside.
Yeah, it's a good thing to, even though if it's not, you know, not always perfect, but it's just good to do it. It's good to, especially through the last couple of years, it's been, when we've all been going a bit mad, I suppose, it's definitely something good to focus on.
Yeah, that's right. So that's it. That's it for me, really. That's all that's going on. I've got a pottery course coming up. That's that I got for birthday, which is good.
Yeah.
So I might throw a few pots, and I'm going to a boat building workshop on the next at the dockyard. So, you know, looking at all these things I can get involved with to express my art or arse, I'm not sure. Yeah.
Brilliant, Dave Reed. Thank you very much.
Cheers, Glenn. Take care. It's what you do.
Thanks for listening to my podcast, and I hope you enjoyed it. I've got much, much more to come in 2022, so why not join me again here at the Groovy Uncle Podcast. wishing you all a healthy and happy new year.